This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. My guest, Eric Bogosian, is part of a new category in the theater described as monologuist, actor, writer. His shows include Drinking in America, Talk Radio, and Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll. Oliver Stone made a feature film out of Talk Radio in which Bogosian starred as a talk radio DJ who's murdered by a right-wing extremist group. Now Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll has been filmed by director John McNaughton. When Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll opened last year, the theater critic for the New York Times, Frank Rich, wrote, "With this brilliant show, his funniest and scariest yet, Mr. Bogosian has crossed the line that separates an exciting artist from a culture hero. What Lenny Bruce was to the 1950s, Bob Dylan to the 1960s, Woody Allen to the 1970s, that's what Eric Bogosian is to this frightening moment of drift in our history." It's a one-man show with Bogosian portraying a series of characters, from subway panhandler to phlegm-spewing old man, sleazy wheeling-dealing entrepreneur, and macho Italian-American hoodlum. Through these characters, Bogosian is able to comment on a variety of social ills. Here he is, an aging British rock star, on a TV talk show.
I used to do quite a few drugs. But you know, Bill, drugs are no good for anybody. I've seen a lot of people get messed up on drugs. I've seen people die on drugs. I was saying to Trevor just the other day, I says, "Trevor, how is it that we managed to survive, you know? After Jimmy died and Janice died, John died. I thought to myself, why didn't we die, you know? We should have died, all the stuff we used to do." Yes, I was, Bill, yes, I was. I was a bona fide drug addict. I used drugs every single day for 5 years. What was it like? I'll tell you, Bill, I used to get up every morning before I even brushed my teeth. I would smoke a joint. While I was smoking the joint, I'd pop a beer. While I was sipping the beer, cook up a spoon of heroin, cocaine, whatever's lying around the house, stick it right in my arm, get completely wasted. Flip on the telly, watch a little telly, maybe have some girls over, get high with them, order up some lunch, fool around with the girls, get high some more. I did that every single day for 5 years. It was horrible.
Do you like these characters that you've created? Do you have affection for them?
Oh, yeah. I have tremendous affection for them. When I do them on stage, there are nights when they actually feel like they're there on stage with me. Sure, they're like old friends. I don't know that if they were real people, I would have any affection for them at all. But they're not. They are characters. And it depends on how you look at the way characters get portrayed. But I always see characters as synthetic things. I mean, they're fake. I wouldn't want to run into some of the characters that exist in my child's cartoons either. I mean, they're fake. They're synthetic.
Do you have to like them to play them? I mean, to be able to create them, does that come out of...
Well, there's always a common thing somewhere in me and somewhere in the character. There's a place where we're very similar. Sometimes it's a bit of a stretch, but it only has to be a piece of me. And it's like taking a branch of a tree and putting it on, grafting it onto another tree, and you get the same fruit. I just take a little segment of myself, let's say the part of me that once every 3 weeks yells at somebody on the phone, or once every 10 years has a drink with some guys on a corner and shoots the breeze. And then I take that and I build it up into a full-fledged character.
So the characters really come from you, not necessarily from things, people you've observed on the screen.
Right. I think the important thing, since so much of this show is about behavior, is to understand that I'm talking about myself. I'm not talking about somebody out there. I really don't like to point fingers because, I don't know, I think it's boring and I don't think I have any right to do it to anybody else. What I'm really doing is I'm taking sort of the demons that live inside of me and making them bigger and bigger and bigger. Sometimes they're very symbolic. I mean, one of the characters in the show talks about how big his dick is, and it's like this is a big thing for him, and it becomes a whole monologue, and it's funny because it's ludicrous. It's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a man who thinks that if he has some major position of power, he doesn't have to worry about anything else in his life. And so for me, it represents, let's say, being rich or being physically strong or being smarter than other people. And then I have no problem playing the guy.
Ever see a girl cry because she's so happy? Ever see someone beg to tear your clothes off? Ever see a woman faint because she's had such an intense orgasm? I have.
I can be up there. I happen to think I'm a pretty smart person, for instance. So I will be on stage, and when I'm like gloating about this huge member, what I'm doing is I'm just transposing me gloating about, you know, I feel extremely confident because I think I'm so smart. It's only one side of me, but it allows me to build a whole character out of it.
So you're figuring things out. I mean, you're using then these characters to try to figure out yourself, I assume. You're trying to figure out also this culture that you're living in or that you grew up living with.
It's me. There are a lot of crooked paths in my life that they don't need to be straightened out, but they need to be looked at just so that they don't upset me I think there's a sort of a path to wisdom there. For instance, I think in the back of my mind, for a long time, there was a little voice that said, if you only made it in show business, you'd really be happy. If you were only rich and famous, then you'd be happy. Now, I can't say that I'm the most famous guy in the world, but the film Talk Radio gave me a certain amount of fame and a certain amount of money, and all of a sudden I found out that wasn't, there was no secret there at all, and there was no key to happiness, and that it didn't really change a whole lot for me anyways. So now I take this character, this boogeyman that lives inside of me, and I build it into a whole character, a character that's, for instance, completely focused on wealth, and then that becomes a way of looking at it.
Does it surprise you that people will go to the theater to see you try to figure out yourself?
Well, I think that people are going because they find me entertaining. In fact, a lot is made of the message that I'm trying to communicate, and I don't think that that's really what the whole thing is about for most people who come to see it. On a given night, 500 people come, see the show, and leave the theater. I hope that most of them feel that they got their money's worth. They were entertained, they saw something, and they go home, and maybe they have a little argument about it afterwards, and they go have some ice cream, and that's it. Maybe 5 people in the whole theater, or 20 people, were touched by what I had to say. They felt that there's a soul connection between me and them in the theater. And I know that that's something that I desperately need. I think artists have a inability to communicate and be close in day-to-day life, and so have this tremendous pressure to communicate through their work, and that's what's happened with me. I mean, today I feel a lot better about the people I spend time with. I spend a lot of time with my family, but nothing makes me more satisfied than to have somebody waiting after the show and tell me that they really, really got it and they know where I'm coming from.
Eric Bogosian is my guest today. His one-man show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, has just been published as a book and made into a movie which will be opening soon. That title, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, in the 60s was a kind of a cry of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using it ironically because it's come to mean something different in the 90s?
Yeah, I think that You can look at it in a really broad way and say it's basically a if it feels good, do it, more is better credo that is kind of suspect. Or you can look at it specifically. I mean, sex is looked at very differently today in the age of AIDS than it was in 1969. Drugs also come down to some very bleak place. And rock and roll itself, as the font of most of my philosophy about life, has really changed into something, for the most part, pretty insincere and pretty hypocritical. I mean,
is that
most of what I know about I mean, living a life where my values are spiritual rather than material, or about being politically active or being idealistic or not trusting anybody over 30. It all came from rock and roll. You know, these guys, for whatever reason, in the 60s, were sitting around selling us the most high-minded idealism that has ever come down the pike, whether it was John Lennon or Bob Dylan.
And you bought it?
I bought it. I bought it, and it's in me, and it'll never go away. But given the situation of the world as it, I mean, I'm an older guy now, and if I think if John Lennon were with us today, he would be a different person. I mean, everybody has to adapt and change and learn. But rock and roll is almost like it's like church for me. It was like a religion for me, and as a result, I feel very let down today. So I'm basically turning the phrase upside down and inside out. And at the same time, I want to leave a lot of it open. I have a friend who is HIV positive back in New York, and he was complaining recently because he said, you know, the thing that's really a drag is that there's now this assumption that everything everybody did was wrong. Nobody should ever have smoked a joint. Nobody should ever have had any kind of wild sex. And he goes, they never admit that there was any fun at that point. And I'm not telling anybody to go use drugs, but I do think that if everybody were following the same straight and narrow existence, it would be a very, very dull world.
One of the characters that you play, he's a, for lack of a better word, a kind of aging rock star. Mm-hmm. And he says, we were having such a good time, we didn't realize what a bad time we were having.
Yes, it's a problem with drugs. Yeah. You're having such a good time, you don't realize what a bad time you're having. Right.
Did you have bad times with drugs, you yourself?
Did I ever have bad times? Oh, sure. In fact, I think a lot of the times using drugs were bad times, and at first a lot of peer pressure, and then later I think just a tendency on my own part to just sort of get loose every chance I got. I just kept doing it over and over again. It wasn't like something, but it was a fad. I mean, late 60s, everybody was dropping or popping something. It just took me a while to understand that I wasn't really enjoying it all that much.
Did you get into trouble with it, so to speak? I mean, did you find
I've gotten into just about every kind of trouble you can get into with those things. Probably the worst trouble of all, and I think it's one of the funny things about that culture, was that drugs were supposed to be freeing everybody up, and yet I saw a more violent and paranoid and narrow-minded side of myself come out due to the use of drugs, and a whole lifestyle developed that was that eventuated in me becoming a person who I never wanted to be and I didn't expect to be. It's been an interesting road back, I'm not sorry that I did anything that I did. I really don't want to repent here on the air on Fresh Air today, but I don't know. I think everybody has to go whatever path they need to go to. When I made the play Talk Radio, people ask me, were you making it about Alan Berg? Were you making it about talk radio? Were you a talk radio fan? I was making it about John Belushi because I was very moved by his death. In many ways, I related to the guy. He was essentially a suburban guy who made it big in the media and TV. And he just, he thought he could just be some kind of rock and roll guy and just do drugs and heroin and stuff. And he died. It's so easy to romanticize this stuff, and it's not romantic at all. When somebody dies, that's it. I know people who've died, and I know people who are institutionalized, and there's nothing nice or interesting about it.
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is actor Eric Bogosian. His one-man shows include Drinking in America, Talk Radio, and Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, which has been made into a movie. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Eric Bogosian is my guest. Do you you really prefer working by yourself? Are you someone that likes to collaborate?
Collaboration is very, very difficult. It means that you kind of have to have an aesthetic blood transfusion with somebody else, and that may not work a lot of the time. I've worked with some really great people on collaborations, and I think in many ways I have been the more compliant partner because I've worked with people that I have tremendous respect for.
Like?
Frank Zappa or Robert Altman or Oliver Stone. But in every case, it has been really, really gratifying. As I find my own voice as an artist, though, it is harder to work with my own colleagues because they... because we're all striving to find what we're trying to say to begin with.
Do you think of words as weapons in a way? Because certainly listening to Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, watching the movie of it, each of these characters has this kind of riveting, fidgety, nervous kind of presence on stage. And the words become, I mean, there is this body of you, the character, but the words are, I mean, they're like, it's like machine gun fire in a way.
Well, I'm haunted by two major 60s notions. One is the medium is the message, and the other is we live in a one-dimensional society. These two notions tell me that, like, there's no escape. There's no way to really say anything anymore because ultimately, you know, no matter what you say on TV, it's still on TV, so it becomes TV. Or no matter what you say, no matter how revolutionary or progressive, it's going to be co-opted by the situation that it's heard in. And as haunting as those attitudes might be, I realized, especially just recently, the incredible power of words, that you can say something and it does make a difference. For some reason, although theoretically it seems that it's possible to co-opt almost any message and to undercut it, it's if you could, well, I learned it during the Iraq War that it's just saying we want peace now, we want this to stop now, was suddenly incredibly threatening to a whole group of people and actually very scary to say it out loud. I mean, if there were no power in those words, it wouldn't be so scary to say those words.
Do you find also, I don't know how old your child is, but also listening to them learn language?
Mm-hmm. My little boy Harry is, he talks a lot. He's four. And
why doesn't that surprise me?
No, it's really something. And I've noticed that he's trying to find a way to organize the world, to explain the way the world works. I would like to tell him that it's futile, but, you know, he'll learn that in his own good time. There's so much about our nature as people that is, you know, you could say it's like the myth of Sisyphus. You're constantly pushing the rock up the hill and it's rolling back down. But so what? I mean, that's our nature. Our nature is to try to place order on chaos. Our nature is to try to strive for good even when it seems futile. And our nature is to get extremely involved with whatever is right in front of us at this moment.
Eric Bogosian is my guest. The movie of his play, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, will open on August 23rd. When did you begin acting? Was there a point at which you began to act, or was it something more
evolved? It was a pretty specific moment. I was in the 10th grade, and the teacher said, we're going to do theater today. And I was going to public high school. No, I didn't know anything about theater. And she just gave out roles, and my role was Juliet's father. And Juliet's father does a lot of shouting and yelling at Juliet for showing up late after coming home late after hanging out with Romeo all night.
Was this typecasting?
Well, at the time, nobody knew that I had any aptitude for it at all. And I slipped into the role and I fell in love with acting. And that's the way it's been since. I love acting so much that I've run away from it a number of times. It's like I don't want to be a disappointed lover. So I stay away from it. I'm afraid, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to try and do it or be in it. And I won't get the opportunities I want. I don't really care about the money side of it. It's really...
Why not?
Well, I like making money, and I make money doing other things. I mean, my writing is very lucrative, but acting, I could do it. You wouldn't have to pay me. I mean, I turn down a lot of things because the kind of acting that exists in, like, TV and movies is most of the time not terribly interesting.
What kind of roles do you get offered when Hollywood producers or TV producers are...
Well, first of all, I get offered roles of guys who have talk radio shows.
That's easy, right?
The next step is lawyers. And then there's another, there's a very large group. I'm Armenian. Armenians are Christian. But I'm very ethnic looking, obviously. David Mamet pointed out in one of his recent books that the Jewish producers in Hollywood don't want to have any Jews playing Jews in movies. I don't know if it's true or not, but I have played a number of Jews in movies. I guess I'm sort of like good at making believe I'm Jewish. After that, the kind of thing that I often get approached with is the terrifically bad guy that the good guy gets to kill at the end of the movie. You know, the guy who peels skin off of women or kills Patrick Swayze and haunts him or something like that. And I just, you know, if it were something like the kind of bad guys that Alan Rickman plays, then I'd say sure. But the thinking bad guys I love, Iago and so forth, Cassius, those are the great bad guys. But most of them, unfortunately, the kind of movies that are made, most of them are really, they got a star and everything supports the star.
Do you watch yourself on screen? Do you spend time doing it?
I mean,
invest
like
your time in it?
I don't like to.
No, why not?
I don't like looking at myself. I don't like watching myself. This is like therapy. I don't like me. I don't know. You want to give me a pillow to punch here or something?
Just an innocent question.
I write a letter to myself here. No, I just, one thing is I'm very critical. And so like in the case of this film, I watched it one time and I said, I can't watch it again because I want every beat and breath to be perfect. It's the great thing about performing live in front of different audiences every night. It disturbs the control side of myself. You can't get it right. There's no such thing. It would be like, again, I keep using the sex analogies, but you can't have sex perfectly. And it was like those books that came out in the 70s about how to make love to a woman. Like some guy's going to read a book and learn how to do it. It's the most horrible. And you can't do it. You've got to be open. And something I learned doing the shows.
Well, thank you very much, Eric.
And thanks for having me.
The film of Eric Bogosian's one-man show, Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll, will be opening in the next few weeks. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.